Hey now, Chris here. Enough people wrote to say that they like that voiceover that I did a couple days ago, that they prefer to listen rather than read, that I thought I would continue the process. Today I'm putting it behind a paywall. We'll see if that brings any fish into the net. But anyway, here I am. Hi, how are you? This is A Few Things Ethical Non-Monogamy Can Be. Now, here's the advantage of the audio. I can't do italics or underline in a title, so you can't see that can is like can be, could be, possibly, maybe. In the title, it just says can be. Okay, I'm going to read. As a follow-up to my recent post about some things ethical non-monogamy is not, I thought it might be fun to consider some things ethical non-monogamy can be. Now, in that case, it is italics. In the best of circumstances. In light of the volume and vehemence of the feedback to my first post. You're here while I edit. I'm taking out the In light of the volume and vehemence, the feedback my first post received. It seems this is an issue folks are interested in, so maybe this will be an ongoing series. So I can tell you at this point, one of the problems with this voiceover system where I just record directly to Substack is that I can't edit the audio. So that little bit of confusion I just had, that brain fart that you just witnessed, I would normally edit out if I were doing a Roma or something. But this is like a one take, it is what it is kind of thing. So maybe I'll think about doing this differently. There's no reason you should have to witness my brain farts. Anyway, for the purpose of these posts, I'm envisioning the most common context for ethical non-monogamy, which is a primary couple who decide to open things up. I just threw that in there because people could say, well, you know, why are you sort of assuming that this is a particular situation or configuration? Ethical non-monogamy can take so many different forms, and that's true. So here's a partial list of some things ethical non-monogamy can offer in the right context. Number one, an opportunity to acknowledge and honor the realities of our partner's sexuality and attractiveness. And this is a big one. This is a really big one. I think a lot of people who are in a relationship, an exclusive, pair bonded, you know, primary relationship, and decide to relax that pair bond in one way or another, one of the things that they report often, if it goes well, is a renewed appreciation for their partner. Because, you know, we take our partners for granted typically after a while, and there's nothing like seeing your partner interacting with someone else, whether it's sexually, romantically, just, you know, chatting at the bar, whatever, where there's that kind of spark, that energy in the air, to really remind you that they are a sexual being and they would be a sexual being without you. You didn't like make them sexual. You didn't wake them up from a long, lifelong slumber. They were already sexual. They were already attractive. And there's a part of them that exists not in your shared context. And I think that is simultaneously the thing that people are terrified by, but also the thing that they are nourished by if they can get past the terror. I think this is, ultimately, this isn't about sex. And I don't know how to say that succinctly yet. So I'll just keep sort of pecking around it, I guess. But I feel like this is ultimately about growth, about honesty, about truth, about bringing reality into the sort of shared delusion that most relationships are, maybe all relationships are to some extent. But, you know, I think we avoid talking about the things that scare us, and that ends up amplifying the fear. We think we're doing the right thing. We're, you know, in the short term, we're avoiding that difficult conversation. But in the long term, that ends up being a big problem. Anyway, so I'll go back to reading. I remember a scene that took place in a hotel lobby in Sydney, Australia, when I was on a Sex at Dawn book tour years ago. I was waiting for a journalist to arrive for an interview. A beautiful woman walked into the room, and for a fleeting instant, I thought she might be the journalist looking for me, but alas, she walked right past me toward the elevator bank. As I watched her walk by, I noticed a couple on the other side of the room who were caught up in a strange dance of denial. He was pretending not to notice the beauty. His partner was pretending not to notice that he was pretending not to notice the beauty. He was pretending not to notice that she was pretending not to notice that. You get the idea. What a waste of energy. And what's the issue? Do we expect our partners to pretend not to notice all forms of beauty on behalf of our fragile ego, or just human beauty? Are rainbows and sunsets off limits too? How much better and easier it would have been for the couple to have enjoyed the moment together rather than let it separate them. I mean, look, there are beautiful people in the world. What's the fucking problem? Like, why is acknowledging that an issue? Because you think your partner's going to drop you for the first person they see who's more attractive than you? Really? Well, if they do, then fuck them. That wasn't a good partner anyway. That was an ad lib. Now I'm going back to the text. Much of the confusion and suffering in our intimate relationships is generated by an impossible demand that we make of each other. Quote, I want you to burn with desire for me, but not even notice anybody else. Or conversely, I want you to be sexy and attractive for me, but if anyone else notices you, I'll be jealous. Well, that's not how desire works. Of course we can choose to only act on our desires with specific people, but the reality is that desire, charisma, and beauty are like fire, throwing heat and light in many directions. Perhaps counterintuitively, an open acknowledgement of the non-exclusivity of your partner's desire and celebration of his or her attractiveness is more likely to strengthen your relationship than to weaken it, as many fear. After all, what are we saying? I recognize that you're a beautiful person, that you're a sexual being who notices others and is noticed by them, and I have the self-confidence to know that our relationship is based on much more than animal desire. Put that on a Valentine's Day card. Number two, a chance to confront, explore, and possibly overcome our own insecurities. We don't overcome our fears by denying their existence or attempting to eliminate anything that could trigger them. The world is full of attractive people. Your partner's going to notice them. You're going to notice them. And some of them, are some of them more attractive than you? Yes. Does that mean your partner is scheming to leave you because you're not the most attractive person he or she has ever seen? Probably not. And if so, you'd be better off without them. Any relationship worth keeping is based on so much more than mutual attraction. Love, trust, laughter, shared history, future plans, family entanglements, children, friends, community. Cultivate these connections and relax about the fact that her coworker is a good-looking dude. Give her a reason to add unthreatened by other people to the list of things she loves and admires about you. And the third thing is an opportunity to travel with our partner. Travel in quotes. Long-term relationships can get stale because we slip into routine and lose sight of each other. Sometimes seeing our partner through the eyes of another can remind us of what we used to see before our vision became clouded by familiarity and the dailiness of life. Seeing our partner as a whole person, separate from the context we share, can be terrifying, but also illuminating. After all, this is truth. We may share a lot, but ultimately, we live as we dream, alone, as Kurtz put it in The Heart of Darkness. There are parts of your partner's experience you will never share. Learn to celebrate and honor those privacies, and you'll both be happier and more relaxed. All right, that's it for today. This will be an ongoing series. So let me know what you think I'm missing, where you think I'm full of shit, what you think I should address in the next post on these issues. And thank you for the ongoing conversation. I really enjoy engaging with you and your comments and your insights. And yeah, as you know, it's an honor for me to be involved with all of you. Thank you for that. And if you're hearing my voice, that means that you are a supporting subscriber. So I'm especially grateful to you. Hope you're having a great day. Thanks.